Night Media Studios and Paranormal Underground Magazine. Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Rick Hale and Karen Frazier.
I don't hear you.
Hello and welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio on Z-Talk Radio. Welcome. I am Cheryl Knight and I am with Chad Wilson.
Hello, hello.
Hey, Chad, how's it going?
Okay.
Good. I'm good. We are sitting in this week for Karen and Rick, who are out and about having some fun. So thank you for joining us. Tonight we have a great lineup. We have a pre-recorded interview with Guy Lyon Playfair, and Rick actually pre-recorded this in June, and he was really excited about it because he really looks up to Mr. Playfair. So it really was an interview of a lifetime for Rick, so you'll hear his enthusiasm when we play it back. I do have to let you know that we had some audio difficulties during that pre-record, and so what you're going to hear is an edited version. Unfortunately, we had some uploading, I don't know what it's called, but some uploading problems where the audio was a bit choppy, so we had to actually cut the interview in about half. So we are going to bring you a 25-minute interview later on in the show with Mr. Playfair. It's a great interview, the entire 25 minutes that we have to play for you. Definitely has some interesting insights from Mr. Playfair, and he is the a longtime member of the Society for Psychical Research. He's a paranormal investigator. He's an author, journalist, and photographer. Basically, he's probably most well known for his work in investigating poltergeist phenomena, as well as other paranormal type phenomena. But in basically back in, when was it, 77-78, he investigated, along with Maurice Gross, the Enfield poltergeist case. And if you haven't heard of the Enfield poltergeist case, go ahead and Google it. It's a pretty infamous case from the history of paranormal research. And later on, when we air the pre-record, he talks a bit about that case and his findings. So we're looking forward to that a little later. First, we're going to be talking live to a paranormal fiction author. And her name is Roberta C.M. DiCaprio. And I got a chance to talk to Roberta earlier today a little bit, and she's just fascinating. She actually has had some interesting first-hand paranormal experiences, so I'm excited to talk to her about that. But she'll also be talking about her latest book called Altered Journey, and it's a book. It basically includes some fictional writing surrounding magic and time travel and some really cool stuff. So we'll talk to Roberta in just a few minutes here. And before we go to our interview with Roberta, I want to talk to Chad real quick. Chad, okay. Hi, Chad. Hi. How you doing? You're doing good today?
Just wore out.
Yeah, you've been at the Orange County Fair again today.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hot out there.
The fair didn't warm out, it's the traffic.
Yeah, which is why we were late last week to the show, because it was raining and traffic. But so you're reading a book right now. What's the book called?
The Ancient Alien Question by Philip Coppens.
Ah, Philip Coppens, yes.
I'd like to actually get him on a radio show at some point.
Oh, that would be cool. We really need to try and invite him and see if he has some time. That would be great. Can you tell me? I know you haven't finished the book, but what's the book about? It sounds really interesting.
It follows along the same lines as the TV show Ancient Aliens. He's actually on the show as one of their experts.
Mm-hmm.
And it just talks about, you know, history and the different theories out there about how aliens might have had something to do with our evolution or our giving us civilization. Stuff like that.
So, would you recommend this book to our listeners?
It's interesting.
Yeah. Does it?
Do what?
Oh, I was just going to say, does it present any new theories?
I haven't got through the whole thing yet, so I don't.
Okay.
Not so far.
Well, yeah, that's okay.
It kind of debunks some of the other theories, like the 12th planet, like Nibiru, that Zachariah Sitchin wrote about. He kind of tries to debunk that a little bit, but
okay,
yeah, it's interesting.
I am finally. I bought this book a little while ago, a month or so ago, maybe. The Sally House Haunting. I'm finally getting into it. I'm happy to say I'm really enjoying reading this book. I've heard about this case a long time ago when it first, I think, it appeared on Sightings first or right around then. Really interesting case, the Sally House. So I'm glad to get. I mean, we had the homeowners on the radio show. When was that? I think it was...
My memory's bad.
I know. I think it was the end of last year, but I can't remember. But this book actually is really in-depth, and it's really good to read because it explains even more about what actually happened there. So I'm enjoying it. So I have to apologize for playing Christmas music at the beginning of the show. Well, it's kind of semi-Christmas music as our friend Chris in the chat room pointed out.
He says he keeps losing sound, but it's his laptop.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope it's not us, but we'll have to check that out. So anyway, I think we're going to go ahead and take a break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Roberta C.M. DiCaprio. And so stick around with us. This is Paranormal Underground Radio on Z Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Chad Wilson, publisher and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Cheryl Knight, editor-in-chief and co-founder of Paranormal Underground Magazine.
Every month, Paranormal Underground explores the unexplained with a free monthly online magazine.
We take an in-depth look at all kinds of unexplained phenomena, talk with some of the field's top experts, and share the latest news and information about the paranormal.
Visit us at ParanormalUnderground.net, where you can read the magazine online, explore our paranormal evidence galleries, watch videos, participate in discussions, or read blogs with some of our writers and editors.
We hope you'll join us. Visit ParanormalUnderground.net and explore the unexplained.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
First there came radio, and it was good. Then it got bad. Then there came satellite radio, and it was okay. Then it got too expensive and kind of sucked. Now there is something new, something better, something free. Stitcher Radio for the iPhone and BlackBerry. With Stitcher, you can hear all the shows and podcasts you can imagine, rate them, and build your own station. No downloading, no syncing, no problem. Just pick a station to get started, like American News and Politics. Now, look at the shows you have to pick from, pick one, and start listening. Like it, make a favorite, and start your own station. Don't like it? Thumb it down and say bye-bye to shows like it. Or thumb it up to find more like it. Plus, you can search and find your favorite podcasts. We have over 1,000 shows to pick from. Stitcher Radio, the natural evolution in audio listening. And it's free.
On the go and missing another one of your favorite Z-Talk shows? Now you don't have to. Simply go to the Google Play Store on your Android phone and download the Z-Talk Radio app. The best part is, it's absolutely free. That's Z-Talk Radio. Only found in your Google Play Store on your Android phone. Download it today.
It starts with an itch and a tingle, and then it builds and expands. And suddenly, all at once, my legs won't let me stand. I scratch till my fingers go numb, but my skin never bleeds. A silent accomplice waits and feeds when I'm asleep. There's something that lives inside me. I promise I'm never. Oh, with an itch and a tingle, and then it builds and expands. And suddenly all at once, my legs won't let me stand. I scratch till my fingers go numb, but my skin never bleeds. A silent accomplice waits and feeds when I'm asleep.
Station identification.
You're listening to ZTalk Radio Network. Operating frequency on ztalkradio.com. The views expressed and opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of ZTalk Radio, its affiliates, or sponsors.
Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalk Radio. We have with us our first guest for the night, and we talked a little bit about her earlier. Her name is Roberta C.M. DiCaprio, and she is a writer of paranormal stories, paranormal romance, historical fiction, all kinds of great stuff. Welcome, Roberta. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's fine to be here. Nice to be here and hear you on this radio. I'm so excited.
Thank you. We talked a little earlier today, actually, and you had some really interesting stories and background on how you got started in writing and your paranormal experiences. And so I kind of want us to start off with, can you tell us about how you actually got started in writing and what prompted you to get into this area?
Well, actually, to tell you the truth, I wanted to be a ballerina, but...
Wow.
That didn't work out because I was born with a walking disability. I have mild cerebral palsy.
Okay.
So my grandmother, God rest her soul, used to say, well, you know, you can't do that, but you can do a lot of other things. Mm. And I would sit on my front porch, and I would read and read and read while the kids were going up and down with their roller skates, on their bicycles, and so forth. And I would read. And I am a full believer that reading begets writing, because when you read somebody else's work, it not only spikes your imagination, mm-hmm. it helps you also be creative, because you look at the sentence structure and how the person has the plot and the characters entwined with each other, and it really, really helps, as I read constantly now.
Mm-hmm.
But reading started me to get into writing. And I would sit on the front porch with my Barbie coloring book, and after I would color the picture, on the margin of the pages, I'd start little outlines like, oh, what Barbie's bedroom color was, and what was her favorite food, and what she did, what went out with Ken, what they talked about. And then I started to write little stories. From the little stories, I made little sock puppets, and I made little puppets out of paper dolls, and I started to put on plays on the front porch.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids started to come around, drop their bikes, get off their roller skates, started to come and watch my little plays on the porch, and then they wanted to be a part of that, so I wrote parts in for them.
Mm-hmm.
And we made sock puppets, and we made paper doll puppets, and we put on plays, and writing is what helped me bring my friends in, because you know, I had to give them I had to offer them something better than the roller skating and the bike riding.
Right.
So that became my hook, and that's also what a writer needs. A writer needs a hook to bring the readers in, to keep the pages turning until the end. So that's how I began to write, and it just stayed with me. In high school, I would write poems for all my girlfriends to give their boyfriends, all the boys to give the girls. And it just started to do, you know, worked on the newspaper in high school, and it just branched from there. And I've been doing it ever since, and I love it.
Wow, that's great. So you actually have been writing from a very young age and turned that into a profession.
Yeah, yeah. It was almost like I can't not write. It's just something inside of me. I mean, I have a blog. My blog is www.thewordmerchantssociety.blogspot.com, and there I give helpful tips on writing, what's helped me get published. And if I'm not writing books, I'm writing blogs, I'm writing letters, I'm writing poetry. I just have to always write.
When did you write your first book?
The first book I ever wrote was The Golden Lady, which is my historical that came out in 2009. And I wrote that in 1984 or 85. I was going through a divorce from my first husband, and I was feeling very down and very low. And a friend of mine gave me a book by Kathleen E. Woodwith. Now, I had never read a romance novel up until that point. I always read paranormal and horror and mystery and you know, nonfiction. And she gave me this A Rose in Winter by Kathleen E. Woodwith. And that inspired me to write The Golden Lady, which is a story about a white woman and an Apache warrior in 1864 falling in love and being married, and her going back to his reservation, his Apache reservation. Nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted a Western love story. It wasn't a time for it. So I put it away, and I did other things, and I went back to school and learned how to, you know, be an after-school program counselor for children, took in foster kids and stuff like that. And I remarried my husband that I'm with now, said, you ought to take that out. You ought to do some more. Come on, you can write. That's good. But I didn't use that story because I said, well, nobody wants a Western. Instead, I wrote a paranormal called Coma Coast, which is with Wings Press.
Okay.
And they took it. And they took the sequel, The Vanity. And then I wrote another paranormal, A River of Orange, and that was taken. And so once I got my foot in the door, I took out the historical again, sent that in, and after 25 years, that was finally put in print. So it just goes to show you, you can't give up.
Right. That is outstanding. That's great. I bet you were very happy at that point.
I was very happy, and now that book is the first book of a five or six part series, and the fourth book will be coming out in November. But today, what I'm speaking to you about is my paranormal altered journey, and that's by that's published by ZLS Publishing, and that is my most recent book that came out last October. And that is an exciting book because that's the first book that I have written in the first person. And I think it went really well. And it's a time travel. So
yeah,
it's something dear to my heart because I love time travel.
Oh, cool. So you've written four paranormal books to date among your
yep.
many other books. And this
yep.
latest book, is it your seventh book?
This latest book is my seventh. Yep, my eighth will be coming out November 11th.
Okay, and so your latest book, Altered Journey, I was reading the description online. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, unfortunately, but I do plan to, but it sounds like a lot of fun. Is it a lot of fun?
It is a lot of fun, and there's a whole lot of stuff going on because you're taking my heroine, Neela, and my hero, Guylan, who are engaged to be married. And they find that they've got a whole lot of other stuff in the family closet other than skeletons. And in their world, you know, not even death is final. So they're both, you know, and they don't know each other's backgrounds until it finally comes out. I mean, you know, they can't hide it from each other.
Okay.
And that they find out that they have been entwined since before they were born.
Interesting. Now, how did you get the inspiration for this book?
Well, Altered Journey is broken up into three parts. And the first part is called The Blessing Train. That's Neela's story. And then Guylands is the portal or the attic portal. And then the third one is about a diary. So what I had a constant dream after my grandmother died. I kind of wished that she could come back for a weekend, 48 hours, every year, and see what was going on in the life of her family. Who got married, who divorced, who had a baby, who graduated college, and so forth. And I started to think, gee, that would be so nice. And that's inspired me to write Neela's story. Now, Neela has this grandmother that can do that. And she has been blessed by a druid, a Scottish druid, which turns out to be Neela's, which turns out to be Guylan's great-grandfather. But Guylan doesn't ever know this because at birth, that Guylan was given up for adoption. So, because his parents were murdered. And that's where the time travel comes in, where when he does discover who he is able to go back in time to save his family. But in doing so, he will be altering things. And does that mean that he will never meet Neela?
Ah, right.
So he's got some tricky footwork. And I send him back to save his family as a three-year-old child, but with his man brain, so that he can concoct some kind of way to save his family, but they're only seeing him as a three-year-old child. So he, you know, he gets into a whole lot of stuff, because at that point, his mother is weaning him from being breastfed and teaching him to be potty trained. So he's going through a whole lot of stuff, having a man's brain and being in a child's body, and it's kind of really... Everybody who's read it says, "This is, you've done this really neat."
It sounds a little surreal.
Yeah.
Very interesting. So, what kind of feedback have you gotten so far on the book?
Well, everybody likes the way I have two stories going on, a plot and a subplot. And at the end, they all entwine into each other. And you never know where it's going to go. And that's what they like. They just cannot predict how this is going to go, because at one point I'm in her head, and at another point I'm in his head. And they're just, it's a love story. It's a strange kind of love story, because while they're going through this, they're not together. They get together in the end, but they're not together while they're going through this. So you're not having love scenes, and you're not having that sexual tension and all that, really, with each other. You're only having it in their minds, that he knows he's got to get back to her. And everything that he does, he has to be careful, because he could mess that all up. And he's doing this all so he can get back to her.
Very interesting. Very interesting. How do your previous paranormal books that you've written, how do they compare to Altered Journey? Are they along the same kind of storyline? Do they, you know, are they different in any way? Are they?
Oh, they're very different.
Very different.
Yeah, they're very different. I have a huge imagination. I have a friend who always says, "Where is this all coming from? I've known you for years. Where is this? How is this all in your head? You would never know it." But my first paranormal with wings is Comacoast, and that's a story about a young woman who is in an accident, an automobile accident, and she goes into a coma, and she happens to meet the man of her dreams in a coma while she's in this coma. And of course, when she comes out of the coma, she's ready to be with him and wants to call him and be right with him, and her friend says, "You've been in a coma for 6 months. You haven't been meeting anybody." And she doesn't believe that. It's been too real. She feels too much. So she searches for him. And she does find him in a coma. So you see, their energies did meet. And now she's got to wake him up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And her best girlfriend, Jules, Finna's best girlfriend, Jules, played such a big part in this story, and she just took over, that I had to write her story. So the sequel to that is called The Vanity.
Okay.
And that's Jules' story, where Jules, when she looks into the mirror, it's not her own eyes that are looking back.
Mm-hmm.
There's an entity that's been locked in a mirror.
Oof, okay.
And I got that idea from when I was a little kid. I used to read Mandrake the Magician. It was a comic strip in the newspapers. And he had an alter world from the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to step through the mirror and go into this world that was exactly like ours, only reversed. And I used to love it. Every week I couldn't wait for the next installment to come because I wanted to find out what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuck with me all these years, so I said, I have to do something with something in a mirror.
Interesting.
Yep. So that's the second one. And the third paranormal, A River of Orange, is an adult fantasy fairy tale. It takes place on an Irish island, and it has mermaids, mm-hmm. and little fairies, and a shapeshifter
mm-hmm.
hero, and, you know, a witch, and all the whole gambit.
So people who like maybe folklore or magic or those types of time travel, they would probably like your books.
Yes, and a lot of Celtic folklore.
Okay.
I tend to like the Scottish and the Irish and the Celtic end of that. I think that's very fascinating and beautiful, and I love Greek mythology.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that, the stories, you know, we take bits and parts of that. Like A River of Orange is kind of a mixture of a Beauty and the Beast and a Wizard of Oz, and you know what I mean? It just kind of taking bits and pieces of those kind of fairy tales and putting them together to make an adult love story fairy tale.
Oh, very nice. Very interesting. Well, do you... I know you talked about it a little bit already, but how does real life, or does it in a big way, inspire your fictional paranormal writing?
Well, when I was first married, I lived for 5 years in a haunted house. And the things that happened to me first only started just happening to me. I remember waking up only the second night living in this house, and I'm hearing a baby cry.
Wow.
And it's crying and crying. A newborn baby is crying. And my son wasn't crying. He was a newborn baby, but I had him in the crib right beside me, and it wasn't him.
Okay.
But I'm hearing this newborn baby cry. So about 3 days later, I'm out in the yard, and the next-door neighbors are there, and I see her with a little toddler, and I'm thinking, oh, maybe it was her baby.
Right.
So I go over to the fence and I said, I heard your baby crying last night. And she goes, no, that's my baby. And the little girl was 4 years old.
Oh.
I said, no, your little, little baby. And she said, well, I don't have a little, little baby. I have a 4-year-old and I have an 8-year-old. And I thought, I wonder why I heard a baby crying last night. And
very
she said, yeah, well, you're going to hear a lot of things, and I didn't know what she meant.
Okay.
Right? I just thought maybe the street was a busy street and people left their windows open.
Mm-hmm.
But as time went on, I'm hearing footsteps up on the upstairs apartment when we had not rented it yet. And this baby continued to cry, and one night I woke up, and I look out my bedroom door to the living room, and my rocking chair is rocking all by itself back and forth.
Oh, my goodness. Somebody was rocking the baby.
I'm nuts. I'm thinking I'm nuts.
Oh, my goodness. You know, it. So I think you told me earlier the house was 100 years old when you moved in.
It was 100 years old, and then I started to do research with a friend who believed me. She was the only one who believed me.
Mm-hmm.
So we went and we did some research, and we found out that the house was owned by a Mr. Furman, who the street was named Furman Street. So he owned all that land, and obviously, you know, as years went on, they broke it up and sold it, and other people bought it. But
mm-hmm.
he had a baby that died of an illness in the upstairs bedroom, which was right above the room that I was sleeping in, and they had cut the house apart and made a one-bedroom apartment up and a two-bedroom apartment down.
Okay.
And that baby was very, very sick and had died in that house,
oh,
in the room above where I was sleeping. And obviously, it must have cried and cried and cried because it wasn't well. And that's what I was hearing.
So did you hear it at the same time every night or certain days of the week?
I heard it. It was always going towards a Sunday night.
Okay.
It was always a Sunday night, and I was so tired from the weekend. I had to get up the next day. Everybody's gone to work and do their regular thing for the week, and this baby would start to cry. Mm-hmm. And it would always start to cry after my husband fell asleep, and he was such a heavy sleeper. I would go, "That baby's crying. The baby's crying." He'd go, I don't hear anything. And I would be hearing this baby crying. It wasn't until we started to hear the stomp, stomp, stomp upstairs.
Okay.
That he jumped out of bed. And he goes, "Holy shit, I think somebody broke in upstairs." So he goes upstairs with this bat, and I'm thinking, oh, my God. Well, they've been up there for a while because I've been hearing it. And he goes up, and he checks the windows, and he checks the doors, and nothing's up there. And I said, there's an up there, but you're not seeing it. Nobody's seeing it because you can't see it. He's going, "You're nuts." Well, we rented that apartment.
Okay.
And after the second night that the new people were up there, the girl comes downstairs and knocks on my door. And I said, what's the matter? She goes, "You're not going to believe this, but I was putting some stuff up in the attic to store it. And I saw something up there, and it walked right through me."
Oh,
and
my
gosh.
Oh,
I believe it.
Did they stay?
I don't know. The climax of the whole thing was, as I told you, I have a walking disability, and I walk on canes. And I was frying chicken one night, and my son was 3 years old, two and a half, 3 years old, playing in the living room. My husband hadn't come home from work yet. And I was frying chicken, and you know how when you fry chicken, the grease splats all over? Well, it had splatted on the floor. And as I was turning around to get something, my cane hit it, and it slipped and landed on the floor.
Okay.
And I can't get up once I'm on the floor. And the chicken is burning on the stove. And I remember looking up and closing my eyes and looking to heaven and saying, "Please, dear God, don't let my baby burn." And all of a sudden, the front door opened up. It just opened. And I said, "Billy, go upstairs and get the lady upstairs and tell her to come down and shut down the chicken." And he couldn't have reached that doorknob. He was too small, and he couldn't turn it. But he knew enough to go upstairs and tell the lady, "We need help." As he was about almost three, and he talked well. And the door just opened up, and I said, go upstairs and get Mrs. McGowan. I said, "And tell her to come and see Mommy, quick, 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 hurry up, we need help." So he runs upstairs and rapped on the door, and he said, "Mommy needs help." And of course, she knew I was disabled, so she came down immediately. She couldn't get me off the floor, but she could shut off the chicken.
Wow. So,
and after that, I knew that I had made peace with whatever was there.
Right.
And they saved my life. So.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like not residual at all. That sounds like intelligence to me. They were there to kind of look over you guys.
Yeah, they were. After a while, I think they must have seen my struggles, how I was trying to take care of my son, how I was trying to keep my home and cook and stuff like that. And I think that they actually became my allies because, I had my sister babysitting one night, and she heard them walking up and down the cellar stairs, and she vowed she would never set foot in my house at night again, and especially would not stay there alone.
Okay. So many people kind of validated the experiences you had.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
There were a few, and I even went so far as to go to the shrine and get these rosaries and holy water and have a priest come in and bless the house and everything. I mean, this was 5 years of this. And that, it got me thinking about, there isn't just this world, and we're not just here. And so I started to read books and write the stories, and, that's the kind of stuff I like.
Now, have you ever considered writing paranormal nonfiction?
Oh, you mean my experiences in this house?
Sure.
I have considered it. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's sometimes it's hard for people to believe you. I mean, my husband that I'm married to right now, he doesn't believe in that kind of stuff, but my daughter does. We've had some incidents in the house that I'm on here now. My daughter swears by the fact that she saw an angel in his house at one point. And I heard her call my daughter's name in the hallway, and my daughter came out and said, "What do you want, Mom?" I said, "I didn't call you." And she said, "I think there's an angel in here." Oh. So she has been sensitive to it. I know some people are more sensitive to those things than others, and I feel that maybe because I can't be quick on my feet, I do nothing quick. I have to move slow and precise, or I could knock myself over, mm-hmm. and I have trouble sometimes gripping things with my hands because of the cerebral palsy. I think that because I have been made to slow down, mm-hmm. I can feel and I can sense and I can see these things better than maybe your average person who's running around and whipping themselves around this world and running around right. like a chicken without a head, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think that's why I've become more sensitive to it, because I do pick up things. I can go places and sense mm-hmm. certain things have happened, not really knowing what, but I can sense something.
So it sounds like you have some type of psychic ability. Would you say that's true?
Well, I wouldn't call it psychic because I can't talk to anything and mm-hmm. I don't see anything
okay.
and I don't know things ahead of time, but I have little premonitions and I have mm-hmm. little feelings and, like mm-hmm. I have dreams and I don't precisely know what those dreams mean sometimes until...
Right.
Like one time I dreamt of a man falling down dead who was wearing a brown three-piece suit. I woke up and said, "Why am I dreaming mm-hmm. that? I have absolutely no idea mm-hmm. why that happened." But then 3 days later, I went to our church we went to a celebration to give a goodbye party to our pastor that was leaving. And one of the fellas that stood up to say goodbye to him had a heart attack
oh.
right there and keeled over dead, and he was oh. wearing a brown three-piece suit.
Wow. So maybe intuition or some type of ability to sense things. I kind of
yeah. It's like frayed or scattered. I mm-hmm. mean, maybe I just don't know how to tune into
right.
it, or I just don't
right.
know how to fine tune it or whatever, because yeah. It's broken up, you know, you'll get little blurps here and there and then you won't know what it is and stuff like that. But I definitely know that I'm in tune to something.
Have in your house, I know you don't live there anymore, but in the house that you lived in for 5 years that you had paranormal experiences in, did you ever hear anything besides the baby crying audibly?
Well, the footsteps,
mm-hmm.
the footsteps upstairs. And the rocking chair going,
mm-hmm.
and I had a cat and a dog that wouldn't go in one room at all, and they are very sensitive to things, and at some point, you know, you have watching the cat look up in the air mm-hmm. and looking around and go, like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, my animals would do weird things, and I remember my three-year-old son climbed out of the crib, and I woke up, and I found him standing beside me in the bed, and mm-hmm. so my husband said, "I think we better get an extension on the crib because we don't want him, you know, walking around in the middle of the night. He could get into everything." So
yeah.
we bought an extension that came up over the crib, and it was, like, virtually impossible mm-hmm. for a kid to get out, and he did. And the next night after we
wow.
put this extension, he's, you know, standing beside my bed, and I said, "How did you get out of your crib?" And he said, "Oh, Popeye came and helped me out." And he was clawing... something, Popeye
helped
him out of the bed.
Wow. I bet that freaked you out a bit.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, things like that were happening all the time. I lived there 5 years, mm-hmm. and I just, you know, I couldn't take it anymore. I said to my husband, "We have to get out of here." It's like, "I know they're not hurting." He goes, "Well, if they are here, they're not hurting anything." I said, "Yeah, I know, but you're always gone, and you're mm-hmm. gone a lot late at night." You know, it's freaky, so...
Yeah. So your husband still didn't... I mean, he obviously heard the footsteps. Did he he's still a non-believer?
Well, I don't know what he is now because we've been divorced since 84, 85,
mm-hmm.
but he was always, you know, very practical. There was always a practical explanation
for it.
You know, he always had an explanation. The house was expanding or it was shrinking or it was old and there's creaks and the boards need this and that. And, you know, he always had explanations. The window was open and that's why the rocker was going. And I said, no, the rocker wasn't going because the window was open. I've had windows open and the furniture does not move.
Yeah.
You know, it never happened to me before, but, you know, he always had logical explanations. And my husband that I'm married to now, he has logical explanations. Mm-hmm. So,
it's difficult, though, when you know what you know, and then the person next to you isn't as accepting.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, there's also feelings that, that go through you.
Mm-hmm.
I can sometimes smell my grandmother's perfume, and just she used to wear Chantilly lace,
mm-hmm.
and I do not wear it.
I do
not have any Chantilly lace, candles, lotion, perfume, mm-hmm. Anything. Nothing is here with that fragrance. And all of a sudden, you know, if I'll be feeling bad, or I'll be upset about something, or I'll be thinking of her the day before or something, I'll smell a whiff of the Chantilly lace, and every time that happens, I start to get this tingling in my hands,
mm-hmm.
and like you can actually kind of feel like a coldness going down your back.
Ooh,
and it's
okay.
Just a feeling that you get, and
mm-hmm.
all this, you just don't feel right in your element, that something is around you that's not usually around
right.
when I smell that, you
yeah.
know? And I'll say to him, do you smell that? And he goes, no. But I do.
Well, do you ever wonder if the person who opened the door for you was your grandma?
No, because she was alive then.
Okay.
But I do believe that when we bought that house, we mm-hmm. went up into the attic and we cleaned it out. We found an old wagon wheel from a covered wagon.
Oh, wow.
We found a trunk, and inside the trunk were shrouds that you wrap people in the olden times in these shrouds, and they lay them out in the homes to
mm-hmm.
For their wake, you know, for the wakes. And so there was something going on in that house. Obviously, a mm-hmm. lot of people passed away.
Yeah.
In that house. I mean, it was over 100 years old, and it was the first house built on the street because the man who the street's named after lived there.
Okay.
It was, you know, it was his house. It was owned by Mr. Furman, and the street was Furman
right.
Street. So,
mm-hmm.
And the funny thing of it is that my daughter wasn't born there. My daughter was born in the house I live in now, and she wanted to go and see this house when she was about 13. She wanted to see all the time we were talking about this house, she wanted to see it. So I rode down to show her, and she said, there's somebody looking at us from the upstairs window, and just as she said that, a car hit me.
Wow.
And
oh
I got in an accident right
oh
in front of
gosh.
That house, and I said, oh, my God, this place is still at it.
Well, I hope you guys were okay.
Yeah, we were okay, you know, fender-bender type of thing.
Yeah.
And but it was just weird. I mean, that whole karma
mm-hmm.
around that house is just so strange.
Well, it sounds like the neighbor knew all about it, because you said earlier, she said that you'd be hearing or seeing more things.
Yeah,
so.
She says, I said, I wonder, well, then who'd be? You know, oh,
yeah.
You'll find out. So nobody had lived in that house. The man that owned that house, he did not live in it. He rented it.
Okay.
And according to the neighbor, they came and go real
yeah.
fast.
Okay.
The tenants came and went
right.
real fast, and they never stayed.
Did the tenant who you said lived upstairs and had the apparition go through in the attic, did she leave shortly thereafter, or did she stick around?
She stuck around, but she, well, the people that were there before her
mm-hmm.
moved out. They kept coming down and accusing me of going upstairs and turning on all their lights. And I said, I can't make stairs. So it's not me, and my husband's working all night, so it's not him.
Yeah.
And they said, well, who's turning on the lights? We think you got, you know, bad wiring and this and that. We had electricians come up. Mm-hmm. No, your wiring's fine.
Okay.
And so they moved out because they thought we were going upstairs and turning on all their lights.
Oh.
The second people came in, and they stayed about 3 months, and she came down and said she was putting stuff up in the attic, and something walked right through her.
Yeah, that would scare me quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she left. The older lady, Mrs. McGowan, was there until we sold the house. She didn't seem to have any problems, although she kept saying that the window wouldn't stay closed.
Okay, the window kept
and
opening.
And my husband went up and fixed it a dozen times, and she would still say, it must be warped, it must be something wrong, because I can still feel the cold air in here, it's freezing in this room. And he says, it's fine, he puts storm windows in, no, it's still cold. And so she was complaining all the time about a window.
So it wasn't probably the window at work. It was probably something else.
It wasn't, you know, electrical problems.
Yeah.
It wasn't the window. It was definitely something else. But nobody was really seeing what I was seeing and putting all these things together. You know what I mean? And I would say to him, "See, because of this, and that." Well, it's just a window. You know what I mean? I'm telling you, it's not a window.
Yeah. You're shaking him. It's not a window.
Yeah.
Well, have you had any paranormal experiences since leaving that house?
Just what I said, the angel. Mm-hmm. That we felt that there was a little angel mm-hmm. in this house. But no, mm-hmm. this house, when I bought it, was only 10 years old. And the fellow that lived here, we bought it from, and he wasn't dead. Nobody died in it.
Okay.
So apparently... But, you know, I'm going to leave it with some things because I've had dogs and cats and iguanas and birds and fish die. And I have a little pet cemetery out in my backyard.
Oh, really?
All my beloved babies and little statues of angels and little urns and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is all holy ground around here. So I know that when I leave... The next people are going to have some entities to deal with.
Wow, yeah. So, do you know whatever became of the haunted house that you lived in, and has anybody else had experiences after you left, if you've ever kept in contact with a neighbor or anybody?
Well, I know where it is. It's not very far from me. Mm-hmm. It's only about a 10-minute ride, because when I bought this home, I, you know, stayed within the city.
Mm-hmm.
And, that part of town is kind of fallen down with not kept up, and, you know, the landlords are absentee landlords now and stuff like that. So I don't even know if anyone is living there. The last time I did go by it with my husband and I showed him, this is the haunted house, there was somebody living there. But we don't know, and, you know,
okay.
I wasn't going to go up and ask
yeah.
him anything.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So, I know you said earlier today when we were talking on the phone that you are a fan of paranormal TV. Which,
yes.
I'm curious, as a writer, what kind of paranormal TV do you like?
I love Fringe.
Okay.
Have you ever watched Fringe?
Yes.
It's on the Fox channel.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think that it's very interesting, the different kind of phenomena mm-hmm. that they get into, and they have sequences there where they have parallel worlds. And I just think that's so fascinating. Like I said, that the time travel thing, parallel worlds, mm-hmm. Things from other planets. I used to love The X-Files.
Oh, yeah. Great show.
and, of course, you get into all the vampire stuff, mm-hmm. I think, is absolutely wonderful. I watch Vampire Diaries, and I'm a fan of the Twilight series, Stephanie Meyer's Twilight series, PC Cast's House of Night series. I love those. I like Supernatural,
mm-hmm.
Dean and Sam and Dean fighting. I even make a reference to Sam and Dean in Altered Journey.
Oh, wow.
Because, yeah, when Guylain goes back in time and he's explaining, his father is listening to him because his father is a druid. He's telling him, he says, you're different than you were yesterday. He says, well, I'm not the Guylain that was here yesterday. I've come from the future. And, he's explaining mm-hmm. something to his father, and he goes, it can happen, Dad. He said, like supernatural mm-hmm. Sam and Dean. And his father goes, what? And he goes, never mind, you'll know. You'll know someday. So I make a reference to them in this story. I love supernatural.
Go ahead.
Just stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I liked watching Secret Circle. Of course, they canceled that now, but that was about the teenage witches.
Okay.
So, yeah, I do. I love paranormal TV.
So tell us about what you have in the works. What future projects do you have coming up?
Well, I'm finishing off the historical series. I have one or two more books to finish with that, because mm-hmm. that is, I've promised this other publisher that I'm going to finish that, and you have to keep your word when you're contracted.
Yeah.
But I do have some other ideas for paranormal. I would like to do something. Do you remember the story Starman? I believe it was Beau Bridges came down and from another planet and took the look of this woman's husband, in which he died. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was Jeff Bridges, and I love that movie.
Jeff Bridges, that's right. Yeah.
I love that movie. It's a great movie.
Well, I started something on that idea. Of course, mm-hmm. it won't be exactly, but on that idea of a woman falling in love with someone from another planet, I've entitled it Quasar.
Okay.
But that is something that I'm going to be working on after I'm done with these historicals. I'd love to get that going.
Oh, that sounds interesting. Definitely. Well, where can people get in touch with you? You gave your blog earlier. I can't remember if you gave your website and if you have a Facebook or something like that.
Yep, I'm on Facebook. All they have to do is put in Roberta C.M. DiCaprio, and they'll see my Facebook page. My site, my website is www.robertadicaprio, spelled DECAPRIO.com. My blog is thewordmerchantsociety.blogspot.com, so they can inspire writers of any kind, published or inspiring, can go on there and get some writing tips that have worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
And, send me a message on my site, so I'll find my guest book, and I'll get back to you. And it's they can read excerpts from my books on my site. There's ordering information. There's also all the covers and all about me, mm-hmm. My travels and everything that I've done. So it's a full site.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it. And I hope that you stay in touch, and maybe you can come back again when you have your next paranormal fiction book out.
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you, Cheryl. It's been fun. You have a good evening.
You too. Thanks, Roberta.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, I think we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to be airing a pre-recorded interview that our regular hosts, Rick Hale, did with Guylain Playfair of the Society for Psychical Research. And I want, hopefully, after that pre-record, which is about 25 minutes or so, I think we'll have a little time to come back on, and Chad and I can chat about the interview and Mr. Playfair's research. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back on ztalkradio.com.
Hi, this is Karen Frazier, author of Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, a new book from Ghost Night Media. In summer of 2009, I visited Wellington, Washington, a former railroad town in the Cascade Mountains of Washington State, where the worst avalanche disaster in the history of the United States occurred. 96 people lost their lives. What I found there changed my life forever. Before I visited Wellington, I wasn't sure that I believed in ghosts or even in the human soul. Now I know for sure that ghosts are real and that our souls go on after we die. You can read all about my experiences at Wellington in my new book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, which is on sale at Amazon.com. To learn more, visit avalancheofspirits.com. Hi, everyone. It's Karen Frazier at Paranormal Underground.
And I'm Rick Hale, Paranormal Underground writer.
We're here to invite you to explore the unexplained with Paranormal Underground Radio, live and on the air.
Join us every Thursday night for paranormal talk and great guests from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time on ztalkradio.com.
Your assignment is to listen to The Buzz on Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Central on ztalkradio.com. This message will self-destruct.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. And the odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 150. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at AutismSpeaks.org. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen.
Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Thank you. competition has taken notice.
Oh my God.
Good luck keeping up with us.
You're listening to Z-Talk Radio Network.
Hello and welcome back to ztalkradio.com. You're listening to Paranormal Underground Radio. And I want to thank our first guest, Roberta DiCaprio. It was a pleasure to talk to her. Very interesting. Got to talk about her books plus some paranormal experiences she had in her haunted house. Hopefully we'll talk to her again in the future. If you want to find out more about Roberta, go to her website. And that is at Roberta DiCaprio, DECAPRIO.com. All right, up next we have a pre-recorded interview with Rick Hale, our regular host, and Guy Lion Playfair, who is a paranormal investigator and a longtime member of the Society for Psychical Research. The interview is about 25 minutes long, and we will be back on air live after this pre-recorded interview. Enjoy.
A couple weeks ago, I sent an email to the Society for Psychical Research. As you all know, it's an organization that I've always admired, and I very much pattern my own group after it, Foundation Psychical Research. So when I sent the email, I really honestly believed that I was only going to get if I got anything at all, I was going to get an email back from, say, the undersecretary to the minister of ghosts and hauntings. But luckily, I got something back way much better. I got back an email from Guy Lion Playfair. Now, if you're not familiar with who Guy Lion Playfair is, Guy has very long and distinctive career in paranormal research and investigation, member of the Society for Psychical Research. He has written such books as The Flying Cow, which is about spiritism and the paranormal in Brazil. This House is Haunted, which is about the Enfield poltergeist. He has also worked with Uri Geller. If you're not familiar who Uri Geller is, we're talking the spoon-bending guy. And, you know, so much to talk about. Mr. Playfair, welcome to the underground.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, like I said, sir, before the show, thank you so much. This is an incredible honor for me just to be able to talk to you. You have no idea. So, you know, as I like to ask everybody, you have such an incredibly long and distinctive career in the research and investigation of psychic phenomena. What exactly was it that sparked your interest in this field?
Well, that's quite easy question to start with. Thank you. I was working in Rio de Janeiro as a freelance journalist, mm-hmm. Working for such highly spiritual outfits as Time Magazine and The Economist and the
American
Chamber of Commerce for Brazil,
sure.
And writing about things like hydroelectric dams, mm-hmm. and the balance of payments and all that stuff. And I ended up working for the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, which was great fun and got me all over Brazil. Mm-hmm. And then they abolished the job. I mean, they abolished the whole office.
Okay.
So I was given a nice sum of money and thrown out. And so I thought I'd had enough hydroelectric dams. And then I met an American friend, an actor from Hollywood who was down in Rio making a film. Mm-hmm. That's Larry Carr. And he was very much into the spiritist scene. And one day he just stopped by and said, would I like to come and watch a psychic surgeon at work? And I thought, well, why not? I've seen the local film, so nothing else to do. And we went out to this remote little house on the edge of Rio, and I saw the most extraordinary things going on. And I thought, hey, this is more interesting than hydroelectric dams, and I ought to look into it, which I
right.
did. And the rest is the rest is the book.
While you were working in Brazil, though, you did happen to work with one of the nastiest poltergeists on record. Is that correct? The Jabuticabal? I believe it was.
Yes, the Jabuticabal. I didn't actually do that one firsthand. I got the report. I collected the evidence from the man who was there,
okay.
and I included that in the book. It's not one of the ones that I personally witnessed, but it was a particularly nasty one because it ended in the death of the the girl involved. She committed suicide. We don't know if it's entirely. We don't know why she did that, of course, but she did. And that was a very, very, very rough one.
Yeah.
Well, the Brazilian poltergeists do tend to be a bit violent. I must say, I got caught in a shower of large pieces of stone crashing down out of the sky, which if they'd hit me, I wouldn't be here with you now. And that was very hairy indeed.
Now why do you think that is? Now, I know with Maria Jose Ferrer, I know that she had spirits that were attacking her that claimed that in a former life she was a witch. Now,
Right.
Now, in Brazil, practices of Macumba, which is, you know, Brazil, and Santeria are very, still very much entrenched in the culture. I know that. And do you think that there was anything to that? Do you think that there were, you know, evil spirits attacking the poor girl?
Well, I try to keep a fairly sort of scientific approach to these things, but it's it keeps turning up on Brazilian cases. Another one, which took place in a suburb of São Paulo called Guarulhos,
mm-hmm.
where the evidence for some kind of malevolent entity was extremely strong. And also, they kept having apparitions, visions of sort of strange-looking animals. I mean, it was really weird, and it was very, very thoroughly investigated by my teacher and colleague and friend, Hernani Guimarães Andrade, who went there about 10 times, I think, and he really did things very thoroughly. I mean, he'd interview them for hours and hours, and he'd measure things, and he'd take photos, and you name it. And he really was an outstanding researcher, and I'm very privileged to have been able to work with him.
Yeah, it's always a privilege to be able to work with people that you really can count on and really can respect and know that's going to give you 110%. Now, with this, I mean, do you believe in demons? I know that that's very popular over in my country right now with right here in the United States with a lot of television shows. Do you think that if these were spirit entities, were these human spirit entities, or were they, you know, something other, something inhuman?
Well, according to the Brazilian tradition, which is very largely influenced by the African animistic cults that came over with the original Brazilian slaves.
Sure. Now, there's so many questions to ask when it comes to the Anfield poltergeist. For example, we'll start off with, what was the general feel in the house when you arrived?
Absolute terror. It really was. They were scared out of their wits. They wouldn't sleep with the lights switched off. They kept it on for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't sleep in separate rooms. They all piled into the front bedroom.
Sure.
And they were too scared to go out to go to the bathroom on their own. You know, they were really in a state of complete panic. And my colleague Maurice Gross was the one who really got them back to normal. He did a superb job in calming them down and getting them to sort of collaborate with us as researchers, which they did very willingly.
Right.
And But when I first went there about a week after it began, it was an atmosphere of sheer panic. I mean, it was very, very powerful, and that's something you don't fake. Why on earth would they?
Exactly. It's been my experience with dealing with violent hauntings or even violent apparitions or whatever that even in this day and age, it seems that people really still don't understand what is going on. So I can imagine that back in 1977, these people would be completely terrified out of their minds.
Well, they'd never even heard of the word poltergeist. In fact, the girls used to refer to the pocket dice, because they absolutely know they were not what you might call highly educated people. They were really living on welfare benefits, you know, and very, very hard up indeed, and quite bright, but not. I'd certainly never read a book about anything remotely connected with poltergeists.
Sure.
And simply didn't know what was going on, and luckily we were able to do our best to explain what was going on and to help stop it.
Right. So, you know, everybody always talks about when it comes to the poltergeist focus, they always say that it's you know, a young girl, she's prepubescent, she's releasing the psychic energy that just, well, completely tears things apart. Now, you and I, we had emailed back and forth a little bit earlier in the week, and I always rather believed that it's possible for me that mom may have actually been the focus of this poltergeist outbreak. It just seems to me that she was, you know, stuck raising four kids on her own. She just had a terrible divorce from her husband. I don't know what the what was going on there. As you said, she was on welfare. Now, I know that people say Janet was the focus. Like I said, I've always believed it was the mom. Do you think that this was maybe just an apparition in the home that was causing these problems, or was somebody in the home the focus or the agent for this energy?
Well, it looked very much as though it was all happening around Janet, because when we separated the family, mm-hmm. which is the first thing you have to do in sort of first aid for a poltergeist, just to get the family in different places.
Sure.
And luckily, the mother's brother lived just down the road, so
sometimes one of them, right?
No, it was John Burkham.
Oh, okay. Sorry, sir.
Nottingham was the next door neighbors, and right. Burkham's were about four doors down, so they were quite close. And when Mrs. Hodgson was on her own, nothing happened at all.
But there is one thing about the poltergeist, about the Enfield poltergeist, that I find extremely interesting, was people were seeing an apparition of an old man, and of course there was the voice that was coming out of Janet. Now, my question is this. I've long believed that poltergeist energy, of course, which is person-centered, I've long believed that this energy can actually wake things up or attract outside apparitions or outside entities into an area. This yes. voice that she was, that was coming from Janet, was she channeling some kind of spirit that may have been either awakened or drawn in by this?
Well, she was channeling a wide variety of stuff, ranging from complete nonsense to what seemed to be messages from her own subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. And then, more interestingly, complete strangers, at least one of whom came up with some correct information which nobody knew, which we only verified about 10 years later. Many people have noticed when you hear poltergeists banging on the floor, it seems to be coming from inside the floor, not the surface. Things don't vibrate in the room, which they would. And luckily, on one of my Brazilian cases in São Paulo, I managed to record a lot of very loud raps, mm-hmm. and then I went upstairs and rapped myself as loud as I could with a broom handle. And when you listen to them on the tape, you can't tell which is which. But when you look at them on the screen, they're just not the same at all. And how do you fake that?
Right. Well, that's, you know, like over here when there's poltergeist outbreaks, they're like, oh, well, you have squirrels or mice living in your walls, and they're the ones that are making all that noise. And it's like, well, wait a second. I'm sorry, but it just seems like you're trying to explain away something rather than explaining it, which is something that irritates the hell out of me.
Well, when I lived in Rio, I had a nice old house up the hill, and I did have a pet animal called a coati, which mm-hmm. I think is a kind of raccoon, and that got into the roof, and it used to leap up and down all night. Mm-hmm. And I thought, gosh, this is a poltergeist. And then about half an hour later, out it popped, and it was a coati. So I think we can tell the difference.
Yeah, oh, most definitely. A poltergeist is. Would you say that which is more common, poltergeist, true haunting, or purposeful apparition?
Well, I've never seen an apparition ever, and frankly, I don't know anybody who has. Okay. There have been certainly a lot of reports of them,
sure.
And I can't say that nobody's ever seen one, but I haven't. And I like to base my writings on things that I have seen.
Sure.
And that's the answer to that one, definitely.
Okay, fantastic. All right, moving right along then. You have done quite a bit of work in the area of hypnotism, correct?
Well, not as a practitioner, no. I've researched it very thoroughly and written a book about it. It was inspired by Shakespeare, at the end of Labour's Lost, you know, when the statue comes down off the pedestal and somebody says, if this be magic, let it be an art lawful as eating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly my attitude to hypnosis. It is very, very neglected, very misunderstood, and not properly practiced.
Sure.
I think it's really quite scandalous, the neglect of this invaluable, safe, easy, cheap therapy.
Sure. Another book that you wrote, what about twin telepathy? Now, I was supposed to be a twin, but my twin died before he was born. And No, that's quite all right. But actually, there we have a big joke on the show about how I consumed my twin in the womb. But
that's quite common. It does happen.
Right.
I mean, even you're in good company. Elvis Presley lost a twin at birth.
Sure. But with twin telepathy, there does seem to be some evidence that twins, especially identical twins, are really able to have this mind-to-mind contact. Now, is that something that's supernatural, or is that something that is completely normal?
I regard it as completely normal. It's fairly rare, but the evidence is getting much stronger. It's something that just hasn't been researched at all, thoroughly, until I did.
Okay.
I started it about 15 years ago, and I've already filled a book, and got quite enough material for another one,
mm-hmm.
and had an article just published this week in a journal called Edge Science, which you can read on the internet.
Okay.
You just type in Edge Science, and there it is.
Okay.
And I've been working with a colleague from Sweden, done experiments in laboratory with a polygraph, where you separate twins, and then you wire one of them up to a polygraph and do various awful things to the other one, like electric shocks, or best of all is to make them put their arm into a bucket of ice-cold water. That produces a very sharp intake of breath.
Sure.
And that shows up on the chart. That's in the book. That's on the cover of my book, in fact. It's, there you are. You can see it. In time, you can apply the methods of scientific research to anything.
Sure.
And if it's a spiritual experience, I mean, there is quite a substantial literature on spiritual experiences. There are some very enlightened Americans that I know, some of them. Charlie Tart is one, and Larry Dossey. And these people, they've written very good books about spiritual side of medicine and psychology and so on.
Right.
There's a whole institute in California of transpersonal psychology, which is very closely related to the kind of spiritual approach to things. So it is being taken seriously, and it's not a separate world. It's all part of. I mean, there's only one world, and that's part of it.
Yeah, very much so. With reincarnation, I know that that's another thing, another subject that you've touched on quite a bit. For me, I am a Pure Land Buddhist, and so, of course, I believe in reincarnation. It's a tenet of our belief system. But, when it comes to reincarnation, I'm reminded of a story that I heard once about in India, where a little boy was actually taken from his village and taken to a village many hundreds of miles away, and he knew this family that he claimed to be the reincarnation of this gentleman who was murdered. Also, in our country, we have the case of Lawrence Venom. They believe that was a reincarnation as well. With the idea of reincarnation, do you think that there is enough evidence to back up the ideas of reincarnation that, okay, this is something that really does happen to us rather than going off to a heaven or a hell?
I think it's the wrong word, actually. I've always been uncomfortable with the word reincarnation because it implies complete return of an entire personality.
Okay.
And you don't generally get that. What is beyond doubt, what is beyond question, is that people have memories of somebody else's life. Europe is where the research began, as I mentioned, with Gabriel Deland. And he found some really very persuasive cases, especially in Italy and France.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was Albert de Rocha, who also investigated cases at first hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ian Stevenson was very lucky to have a very generous endowment from Chester Carlson, the inventor of the Xerox,
okay.
who financed a lot of his travels. And he thought he should go to the countries where he was most likely to find cases. He's a very sensible attitude, so he headed for places like India and Lebanon,
mm-hmm.
where the Druze community, reincarnation is almost a law. The Druze believe that you reincarnate the moment you die, in and out, whoosh. And so, of course, everybody in every Druze in Lebanon and Syria, and also in Brazil, a lot of them there,
mm-hmm.
They've all got reincarnation stories to tell you, and I in fact did write a book for the local the Druze Heritage Foundation here in London.
Sure.
So they wanted the subject better known, and they wanted to show that it was not only they who believed in it. So I did that for them, and the publisher himself had a remarkable experience where he said he identified his previous aunt in the street, and she accepted him, and there you go.
That's incredibly amazing. I cannot imagine going up to a 90-year-old woman that I see walking down the street and being like, Auntie Mabel, it's me, do you remember me? And, you know, and your former person has been dead for, God, 70, 80 years. I would think that would be a very strange kind of, for anybody to experience.
Well, yes, and I can't help noticing that it seems to be only the Druze who experience it, but I won't... argue with them. They're delightful people, and I was very happy to work for them.
Sure.
But that's their belief, and I think you have to respect people's faith, provided it doesn't make them blow up buses and things, which unfortunately some of them do. But the Druze are the most wonderful people. They're very hardworking, peaceful, and
mm-hmm.
charming, and if that's what they want to believe, fine.
Sure. Well, I definitely have this, I have a very serious fear of water. Of course, I have no problem drinking it or bathing in it, but getting me near a swimming pool or a natural body of water, I begin to shake. I'm terrified of it. Do you think that that's something that, it seems like a very irrational fear. Do you think that I could have been a drowning victim in a former life, perhaps?
There have been a lot of cases where that seems to have happened, yes. I think there's no harm in trying a bit of regression. If you get the right sort of person to do it,
mm-hmm.
It can be quite effective if it's done properly.
Yeah.
But very often it's not done properly, and you end up a whole lot of memories of things that never happened. But if you find somebody, preferably a doctor or psychologist with qualifications,
mm-hmm.
who does the procedure correctly, there have been some very, very interesting cases of memories of death. And quite often, even if in fact you never did drown in a previous life, you can be given a kind of psychotherapeutic treatment where you think you did,
mm-hmm.
and you realize that you're quite safe now, so you're no longer afraid of water. It's a kind of removal of phobias, which in itself is very useful.
Yeah.
It can also be done by hypnosis. I mean, you can remove phobias. Paul McKenna, you may know, whom I've worked with, he's particularly good at that. He can do the most extraordinary things with people who are afraid of heights and get them walking across tightropes and things. He's actually done that. So
I can't imagine the normal person would find walking across tightropes all that exciting anyways. That seems like something you'd have to be intensely trained for. I've never personally had anybody plant a memory in me about being afraid of water or anything like that. I've never been hypnotized. The other host of the show, Karen Frazier, who she couldn't be here today, she's actually been regressed a couple of times, I believe, and she's found out some very interesting things about past lives. Personally, me, I've never had it done. I've always been afraid of finding out that I was Jack the Ripper or, somebody else in a former life. I can't imagine that would be something I would be too interested in knowing. But, Mr. Playfair, it's been an incredible honor to be able to speak with you. For me, you are a living legend in the field.
Thank you.
A very long and distinctive career. And I would just like to say thank you so much for granting this interview. And it's been a real pleasure. So, Guy, I'm going to let you get off to what it is that you're doing over there at 7 o'clock in the evening in England. And, again, thank you so much for granting this interview.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
If you are a small business owner, you are paying too much for products and services. Do not spend your hard-earned cash on items you can get on trade. UTXTrade.com was formed specifically so you can trade your products or services with other companies on the network for items like advertising, computer repair, office furniture, printing, hotel stays, and much more. For more information, please visit UTXTrade.com. That's UTXTrade.com, a proud sponsor of Paranormal League of America.
In her riveting novel, Breaking the Beyond, writer Kim Casey brings to life a supernatural tale filled with mystery, humor, and intrigue. Kim's suspenseful story focuses on Risa, a compassionate social worker who assists Owen, a young psychiatric patient. Is a 300-year-old entity speaking through Owen, or does he simply possess multiple personalities? Visit awningpublishing.ca to order your copy of Breaking the Beyond. That's A-H-N-E-E-N publishing.ca.
Hi, this is Nick Redfern, and you're listening to Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio on ZTalk Radio. Tonight has been a busy night. Wow, I'm tired. We have had two guests tonight. The first was Roberta DiCaprio, a paranormal fiction writer and paranormal experiencer. And then we just ended the pre-recorded interview that Rick Hale did with Guy Lion Playfair of the Society for Psychical Research. So it's been a pretty cool night. We have some time now to chat amongst ourselves, don't we, Chad?
Yes.
Woo! Awesome. So, Chad.
Yes.
I know you have a topic you want to talk about, so why don't you tell us about it?
I was sitting here the other night, and I was watching some of the new shows, such as School Spirits.
Love it. Oh, sorry.
And it made me think of, like, Paranormal Witness, shows like that.
Love it.
And then I looked at the other shows like Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures, and I'm like, you know, I really prefer the shows where they actually tell a story instead of watching them sit around and, like, scratch their butt and whatever they do in the dark.
Yeah. Is that what they do? Okay.
So that being said, I would actually like to see a show where they actually, if they're going to do that kind of show like Ghost Hunters or something like that, they ought to have a show where they actually explore, you know, what causes the activity, and what kind of energy is that, you know, is, you know, what causes, you know, maybe the temperature to drop and EMF to pick up, and maybe you get an EVP. What causes that, you know? And it doesn't seem like they're just looking for evidence. They're not actually looking for the explanation for the evidence. And I think that's something that needs to eventually be made and put on TV or whatever.
But I think that's a great idea. And honestly, I mean, did Ghost Lab kind of do that? I mean, I think there's a few shows out there that kind of have tried to do that. Or what was that one called?
American Paranormal. They did it in prison. On Nat Geo.
Thank you. Exactly. Didn't they try and do some of those types of experiments?
They actually used high-tech equipment. They were doing they did a special on infrasound, which is the effect that sound has on the human mind and causes some of these paranormal events. And basically showing it was something that was in people's minds. It wasn't actually, it had a logical explanation. It wasn't actually paranormal.
Ah, interesting. Well, I think that, to me, that interests me a lot. I don't know, as a viewer, I would be interested in watching that.
Well, I know you said Ghost Lab, but I think some of these people say, oh yeah, we're looking for evidence, but then some of this evidence I hear on TV, I'm like, what is that? It's not, you know, it sounds like a zipper. And they're like saying it's saying. So, I mean, just because you have, I mean, yeah, I've actually heard some clear EVPs, and I think that there is some validity behind EVPs. But not every sound you hear that's unexplained is an EVP. And they don't do enough digging into that to find out what's causing that. And it just, oh yeah, it's an EVP. There's a ghost.
How could they, what kind of evidence could they come up with that would explain, let's say, an EVP? What would you be looking for as far as evidence?
Well, I would want to look behind what's causing that EVP, because, like, say you go in there and you're doing an EVP session and the temperature drops 10 degrees, you know, what caused that? You have an EMF spike of, you know, whatever. And what caused that? You know, is it related to the EVP? Is it the spirit trying to draw energy? Is there, like, some kind of energy surge? You know, what causes that? And they don't do enough to explain. All they're saying is, oh, we got evidence, we got EVPs, but that, you know, what evidence of what?
So to do that, you'd have to repeatedly find a cause to then say.
And you would have to let people would have to be able to, I guess, I can't think of the word. They have to be able to, help me out here.
I'm sorry.
I can't think of the word. They have to be able to.
Test? No.
Yeah.
Am I
they have to be able
close?
Be able to do the same things.
Yeah. Yeah, to do repeated investigations and have the same type of phenomena and the same type of environmental conditions, I would think, to prove that. Or, I mean, it's it's hard to prove paranormal phenomena.
I would actually like to do a web series with Pug that would explore that, you know, and it wouldn't have to be on TV. It could be on the internet somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
And it would just be us going out, and we would use, like, say, they have these actual sensors that you can actually put in an area, and it'll read the temperature. And then when you get done, you go in there and you put it in your computer, and it's right there. You know, you could set up some kind of sensor array or something like that could read that stuff. And then, you know, if you get EVPs, you could say, well, when we got an EVP, you know, this is what happened in the environment, and you could kind of mm-hmm. make some kind of correlation.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of work, but that work has to be done to be able to prove things. I find EVPs impressive sometimes. Other times, I don't find them impressive. But it's here's the thing. If you're not... How do you get people to believe in your quote-unquote evidence? Because a lot of people, if they're not there, they don't, you know, they don't really give it the time of day.
I guess it depends on who you're trying to convince.
Yeah.
You know, if you have people out there, they'll believe you. I mean, even if you're wrong, they still believe you. Mm-hmm. But, like, say, if you really want to convince scientists, people like that, you have to actually speak in their language, and you have to do it the way that they would do it, you know, in order to say, look, this is what I'm doing. I'm doing it your way, and this is the results I got. And if you have to be ready to admit that, hey, there's nothing going on.
Yeah.
And trust me, I believe in the afterlife. I just think we're a long way from proving. All we're doing is getting evidence, and this doesn't really prove anything in the long run.
Yeah, you have some good points, Chad. I think you should get on that web TV show.
Serious.
Yeah. On top of everything else you've got going on. Yes. What were you going to say?
Nothing. I'm done. I'm done ranting. I was just thinking of that the other night when I was watching TV shows.
Yeah. I'm a fan of the paranormal experience shows. So like shows like Paranormal Witness, This New School Spirits. Oh my gosh, it's scaring the you know what out of me. Last night's show scared me.
Scared Corey because he went to sleep without the lights.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, my son is going to kill me. But he's 17 and he loves the paranormal stuff too. And he watched the episode of School Spirits on last night. And I was going to bed late and I noticed his light was on and I kind of peeked in and he was in bed asleep with his light on. He was scared.
Yeah, so we got to tell them either the Wikipedia art from, I guess.
Yeah. But I love those shows because, you know, if we don't share our paranormal experiences, then where are we going to go from there, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, good point. So, Chad.
Yes.
I'm going to say a series of words one at a time, and after each word, you're gonna answer me with one word.
This is just like one of those relation games where I just got to... clean my mind up so I don't say
clear your mind. Yeah, clear your mind. All right, tell me when you're ready.
Go ahead.
Bigfoot.
Sasquatch.
UFOs.
Abduction.
EVPs.
Real.
Villisca Axe Murder House. Okay, that's four words.
I've been there.
That's okay. Three words is good. Waverly.
I've been there.
That's all I got. That's it.
So what was this supposed to be?
Oh, I just wanted to see what you'd say.
Oh, so what do you think about those places?
Since we're
talking about Waverly and Villisca. You've never been to Villisca.
I've never been to Villisca Axe Murder House. I know you have, Chad.
You got sick at Waverly.
I got sick. Yeah, so a bunch of us from Paranormal Underground got together, and we went out to Waverly in Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And we set out to investigate Waverly. An infamous haunted site.
Now, there's just 13 people there. It was us and some other people we invited. We basically rented the whole place up for one night by ourselves.
Right. Yeah, it was really cool because there was only the 13 of us, and that was it. We had a tour guide give us a brief tour to begin our 8-hour investigation, and then we were on our own. But I really anticipated that investigation because I have not done much in the way of investigation except for, you know, a few guided tours on the Queen Mary and the Whaley House in San Diego. But so 8 hours, I was like, woo, can't wait. Unfortunately, 4 hours in, I got extremely sick and was out for the count.
So
I did not get to complete the investigation, and while I was there, I did not have any type of...
other than getting sick.
Other than getting sick, which could be a paranormal occurrence.
Well, because
I'm not
we were
sure.
leaving, and we were driving,
nothing
we were
else
driving out of the parking lot and turned down that big long drive that heads up to the main road, and you got better.
Okay, I'll admit, it was very strange, because it was really hot that night, and so I kept drinking water, had bottles of water with me, because sometimes in the heat or the humidity, I get dehydrated. But I didn't feel at all dehydrated, and then I got sick and stayed sick. I won't go through the details, but then once we were driving out, like you said, Chad, bam, I was fine. Like, perfect.
I'd like to see what would happen at Villisca.
Very strange.
Because we had a weird experience there when we were there that night in 2008. We were up in the children's room where four children got killed?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Was it four or five? I think it was four.
There was two downstairs. It might have been two downstairs and three upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, there was four because there was eight people got killed in that murder.
Gosh. Yeah.
But we were up there doing an EVP session, and we're just sitting there and we're talking, and we're asking, you know, who did it? Because nobody really knows who actually killed that family.
Right.
Yeah, this is back in 1920 something. And so we're sitting there, and we noticed the temperature kept dropping. And we're thinking maybe it's a draft, because the house was kind of rickety, and, if you walked through it too hard, it would shake. And, it's just an old house, but it didn't have any electricity in it. The electricity had been cut off from it.
Okay.
So we're sitting there upstairs in this room doing an EVP session, asking questions, and one of the guys that was there with us, Mike Larkin, he was sitting there with a digital EVP or EMF meter, and I had my tri-field laying in the floor and had the light on it so we could see it. And all of a sudden, one of the girls, Mike's wife Bree, was doing had the probe for doing temperature readings, and it just, like she said, it dropped 10 degrees, and then Mike's EMF meter went off. It went up to 5, and then right after that, my EMF meter went up to 5.
Interesting.
And actually, when it did that, I felt like the shock go through my body. And I've felt that before. Usually, I've heard that you can actually have that happen, like if a spirit is near. I guess some people are sensitive to that extent. I don't know.
That to me, when you have multiple pieces of equipment picking up on something unusual, that is what really impresses me.
Yeah.
And that seems a bit paranormal to me.
Well, I'd like to go back and revisit that.
Definitely. I want to go with you because I didn't get to go last time. I was supposed to be there with you guys. But I didn't make it. But I want to go back there again. I want to go back to Waverly because I really want to make it through the night. The entire night. Not just half of it.
Where I would like to go again is the Queen Anne Hotel.
I'm there with you.
I really enjoyed that. I mean, I actually got that on tape, the whatever it was, knocking on the walls.
Yeah, we had an interesting night in the, what was the name of our room? The Miss Mary Lake room?
Yeah.
Yeah, supposedly one of the most active paranormal activity-wise rooms in the hotel.
It was, used to be a boarding house for girls, women, and Miss Mary Lake was the headmistress. And her office was actually in that room, and supposedly it's haunted, like you said. And it's really beautiful, like at Christmas time. They had all the trees downstairs, and they had a big fireplace.
It was wonderful.
I would recommend it to anybody who's in San Francisco to try to stay there.
Stay at the Queen Anne Hotel. You won't regret it.
Yeah, it's I can't remember where it's at. It's up in the hills. So.
Yeah. Well, what happened? Tell everybody what happened while we were conducting a random EVP session.
Every time we go to a place like that, we always try to do something, like an EVP session or something like that, just to see if we can, get anything. Well, I don't know. I haven't actually listened to the audio. I'm kind of ashamed of myself. But we were sitting there. And we were asking these questions, and you would hear a knock. And first I thought it was just the room settling because we turned the lights off. But it would knock on the TV cabinet. It would knock on the bathroom door. It would knock on the closet, and then it would knock on the wall. And it, actually, the walls and stuff it was knocking on didn't have anybody on the other side, so there couldn't have been anybody back there knocking on them because they were there in the room. There was both walls were there in the room. So, but then I noticed the pattern. I said, well, if you know, if there's somebody here, knock like this, and I knocked on a wall, and I knocked four times, and it actually...
Yeah.
Knock.
That's when I thought it's not just the room settling.
Well, yeah. Here's the thing. When we went to bed later, none of that happened. If it was the room settling, it would have done that when we turned the lights off again to go to bed. So right. I didn't hear any of that.
No, we didn't have any type of those knocks at any other time that I can remember in that room. And so it was like there was someone there communicating that way. We really need to go through that audio to see if we have any EVPs.
Well, I haven't gone to the last Queen Mary audio we have either. I want to go back there. I like that place.
Yeah, definitely. We've been on the Queen Mary...
Twice.
I thought it was three times. Has it only been twice?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I love the Queen Mary. It's a very cool place. Their paranormal tours are really fun. Well,
I got to go down into the bottom of the ship. Mm-hmm. Well, you went with me the first night. Second night, I went by myself.
Yeah.
With Pat Wheelock, who's the Beyond Radio guy.
Mm-hmm.
Over to Queen Mary, and but they don't let you do it no more because they won't say, but I think it's probably because they've had water leak, so maybe it's got water down there. And they don't want people down there in it.
Yeah,
but it was spooky. I don't know. I'm kind of still open on the Queen Mary.
Yeah,
I mean I've never really that I know of experienced anything there.
Well,
but your son has so.
Yeah, he experienced something on the Queen Mary as well as at the Waverly House, but I don't with the Waverly House, the Whaley House.
Yeah, was that the Whaley? I thought he had one there too.
Yeah, he did at the Whaley House.
Okay, yeah, we need to go back there too. Even though I don't know about that place.
Yeah,
I think it's more of a money making venture.
It's supposedly one of the most haunted sites in America.
Well, they say that about every haunted. That's like the Myrtle's Plantation. They say it's the most haunted. Yeah. But I've actually heard stories about that. I've actually heard from people who have been there who've had experiences. Not people off TV, but people I actually know, or my mom knows.
Yeah.
I would like to go there someday and you know, check it out. Just to go and see what's going on.
Can you talk about that experience that your mom had?
It was a friend of hers.
Okay.
And they were staying in, I guess there's like an old slave shack that was outside the house. And they were staying in there. And they didn't think anything of it. But 5 o'clock in the morning, they said they heard something knock on the door. Well, they didn't want to get up and answer because, you know, it's 5 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then all of a sudden, they were like, they couldn't get up. They were in the bed and they couldn't sit up. And it was like that for probably, I think she said, an hour. And they were just sitting there crying and screaming and trying to figure out what was going on. And finally, whatever it was, just left. And they were able to get up again. So
I don't even know what to make of that.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, we had one of our forum members write about his investigation at
Ryan
the Myrtle's Plantation. Yeah, Ryan Tackett from. I blanked
C,
again.
It starts with C.
He has a group in Texas.
In Waco,
yeah. That they. They investigate every now and then. But anyway, he wrote an article in the magazine, and I can't remember which issue, but if you go to Google and type in Myrtle's Plantation Paranormal Underground Magazine, it'll probably pull up a link for you. But they had a very interesting photograph that they caught and a few other experiences that I thought sounded pretty impressive. But very interesting places. I don't know. I have so many places on my wish list that I want to go and check out. There's just too many.
Then again, you go to these places, but what are you actually gathering?
Personal experiences.
You might have a cool picture. You can't explain. You might have an EVP, but I don't know. I guess it depends on what you're into the field for.
Yeah.
If you're in it just for the fun of it, I mean, that's your business.
Well. It is.
Seriously, it is. If you want to spend your money to go investigate places, that's fine. That's your business.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you could actually call it investigating or just going to have fun. But I mean, then you think, are you having fun at the spirit's expense? I mean,
well, I think, like you said, it depends. It depends on what your motives are. So, I think a lot of people want to find answers about what happens after we die, and that's why they do it.
Yeah.
That's my thoughts on it, but... We are actually out of time.
Oh, man.
But guess what, Chad? What? Next week you get to come back and do this with me again.
Well, at least I don't have to worry about the fare next week and driving in traffic.
So. Yeah, you won't have to drive in traffic next week.
I'll be better prepared.
Yeah, but next week we have a pre-recorded interview to play for our listeners. Yeah. We had Rick was able to interview the Dead Files team, physical media. What was that laugh for?
We'll see if we can, what can we salvage from that.
Unfortunately, well, let me finish my statement. The Dead Files team, physical medium, Amy Allen, and retired NYPD homicide detective Steve DeShavi. Unfortunately, we had technical difficulties yet again, and we have some choppiness going on, and I'm going to have to go through and edit the interview and save what we can. And, oh, my gosh, they were so awesome. I really wish this whole interview had come through because they were phenomenal. I love listening, taping while Rick was talking and interviewing them, and they were talking. But come back next week, and we'll probably also do some roundtable questions. And then the week after, we have Jeff Stewart, founder and director of Paranormal Investigators of New England, also known as PINE. We check out ParanormalUnderground.net. We are going to have a new magazine up soon, finally. And please check out our blogs, forum, podcasts. You can find our radio podcasts on iTunes, Podbean, and ParanormalUnderground.net. And what am I missing, Chad? Am I missing anything?
I don't know.
Well, I wanted to say thank you to our guests tonight, Guy Lion Playfair and Roberta DiCaprio. Really appreciate their time. And if you're listening live, please stay tuned because Fox City's Paranormal Radio are on next, and they are going to interview Paul Bradford, paranormal investigator. You probably saw Paul on Ghost Hunters International. So thank you, Chad, and thanks to our listeners and our chat room members who stuck around for the show, and special thanks to Darla and Chris in chat room for having some great conversation. All right, thanks, everyone. Have a good week. See you
next week.
Bye.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor@paranormalunderground.net. Until next week, keep exploring the unexplained at www.paranormalunderground.net and join us again next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Z-Talk Radio Network.